All right, we're starting on the top of Kuzayin of Aleph, the two dots. So the Gemara is asking over here about the Mishnah, which states the Mishnah puts together a relationship between barley and wheat and barley, and then it makes another relationship between kitnit and tvuah, which says that in our Mishnah, it seems to be, and the Mishnah states that tvuah lo yizrena kitnit, that if you are granted permission to plant grains, that you should not plant legumes. The other way around, whereas if you're granted permission to plant legumes, then you can plant it as grains. So it's clear from here that the Gemara thinks that the kitnit drain the land much more, so and therefore it would be an upgrade. To plant legumes would be something, or not as something you could presume just because you got permission to plant grains. So Gemara says, Matne le Rav Yehuda le Ravin. Yehuda was teaching Ravin, and in his Breisor, when he taught him, it says, Tevuah Yizra'ena Kidnit. The other way around. Then when it comes to Tevuah, when it comes to grains, you're allowed to plant legumes. It means that if you got permission to plant grains, then you would be permitted to plant legumes. And of course, right, that's the exact opposite of our Mishnah. So I'm alive, Anan Tnan. Didn't we have our Mishnah that says, Tevuah lo Yizra'ena Kidnit? Right, that Tevuah, you're not allowed to plant kinit. If you get permission for Tevuah, you're granted the right to plant Tevuah. You're not entitled to plant legumes over there. Samalei, Lukasho, that's not a question. Halan, Halahu. Right, that's for them, that's for us, and that's for them. For them and us, throughout Shas means B'nai Bavel versus B'nai Eretz Yisrael. Generally, Rashi and Tosfot in a number of places throughout Shas argue about which side is Eretz Yisrael and which side is Bavel, who's the Halan and who's the Halahu. Here it's a little clearer, and obviously you see no Tosfot over here, so that he agreed with Rashi in this instance. But Halan is by the Mishnah. The Mishnah is in Eretz Yisrael, right? In Eretz Yisrael, the land gets drained much easier. Why? Because it's a mountainous areas and they depend on the rainfall. And because of that, if you do something that plant something that's an upgrade from grains to legumes, that will deteriorate or detract from the land, and we won't permit you to do that. On the other hand, in Bavel, it's an area which is plentiful in moisture and water, right? It's in a low-lying area. For them, wasn't a problem. If you change from Tevuah to Kidnit to Tevuah, it wouldn't make a difference. Even if you drain the land a little more, the land recovers at a much faster rate, and therefore it would not be a problem. And of course, Rabbi Shimon disagrees. As Oseir, as we saw before, Rabbi Shimon doesn't allow this either because, right, the first reason which we rejected Rav Chista was because Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel believes that you're not allowed to change your commitments or your word given. And the other reason which we did accept, right, which was the position of Shimon Gamaliel is dependent on crop rotation. Right? As an issue of, as Abai says, that has to do with crop rotation. There we had a machlokas Rashi and Tosfot yesterday about whether crop rotation is beneficial or detrimental to the field. So now, Amar Lei Rav Huda, the Ravin Bar Rav Nachman. So this is the first statement of a number of statements that are going to be made by Rav Yehuda, the Ravin Bar Nachman. So he says, Ravin Achi. So these tachle, which Rashi tells us are shechalim, right, which are, leeks, or they cause problems for the pishtan, the flax that is growing in that area. If you go into the field and you pick those items out of the field, you are not classified as a gazlan. Because why? Because that is beneficial to the balim. Since these items will cause detrimental or have detrimental effects on the pishtan that is planted there, therefore it's to the benefit of the balabatim for you to pick it out. So when you pick it out, there's no din of gezel. On the other hand, omdot al gvulin, if they stand on the borders, meaning this is for the kishim are found on the shechalim are found on the borders, yesh behem mishum gezel. In that case, there is a issue of gezel because in that instance, they're not really detracting or affecting the pishtan that is there. Where it says, "V'him hukshu the zera," right? If they have already, meaning here from the word hekesh, but if they've grown at the same pace, or they've been there along with the pishtan all the way along, afelu debei kitna nami yesh behem mishum gezel. At that point, right, there is gezel. If you go in and take them out, if they've been growing there for, I guess it seems to be like a long period of time, and they haven't been removed, and they're growing along with the pishtan, then there is a problem of gezel to remove them. My taima, my da afsid. The loss that was caused, right, is already done, meaning that loss has already been caused, and you can't rectify it at this point in time. So going and picking them at this point is not going to really help the balabait. So it has to be a case where you catch them early, and then in that case it won't be gezel, and you can remove them because there you're benefiting the balabait. On the other hand, if it's on the border or they've grown significantly enough already, then it will be have a problem of gezel because you can't no longer you're going to benefit the balim, and therefore you can't come along and pick them. Right, number two statement. I'm really Rav Yehuda the Ravin Bar Rav Nachman. This is the second statement he made to him. Ravin Achi, Hane Dili Dilach VeDilach Dili. What is yours is mine, and what is mine is yours. So Nahug Bnei Metzra. So the general minhag of people who share a common border, common neighbors that have a fence between them. Ilana Notela Kan Lukan. They have a tree right on their border, and the tree goes in both directions. That which goes to this side goes to that side, and what that goes to this side goes to that side. What does that mean? So now, Rashi's focus, we're going to get to this in a second, I'll explain to you the Gemara, because the Gemara is going to continue with this. Rashi's focus is on the roots. Rashi's focus is on the roots. And therefore, De'itmar, Ilano made on the Meitzar, a tree that stands on the border, Amarav, Anotelekan, Lekan. So this statement of Rav is exactly what Rav Yehuda said to Ravin Bar Rav Nachman. That means that goes this way and that goes this way. They belong to each side. Now, what does that mean? According to Rashi, that means that whichever side the roots go to, meaning that wherever the roots go to, that's how the division works. So if the roots split evenly, they'll split the tree evenly. If the roots are all to one side, then it all belongs to that individual. It's all determined by the spread or the division of the roots. On the other hand, Shmuel Amar Chokim, they divide it between them. That's the way Rashi reads it. It's Tosfos over here right away jumps on Rashi and says, he says, Paris Akuntris Enim Yushav. He says, I can't understand. I don't really totally can make sense out of what Rashi is saying over here. So Tosfos says, he says, near the Faresha, Ilano made Mamashal Ametzar. The tree is literally on the border. Shushal Shnehem. It's both of theirs. Veinar Shorashim Mit Pashim the Karkakosh Zem Etermizet. The roots split evenly between the two parties. Ach, hanafim notim yoter l'shel echad mehem. The branches go to one side more than the other side. So Rav Amar Oten l'kan l'kan. So Tosa says what? It's determined by where the branches are. Since the roots over here are equal, so the roots are not a determining factor anymore because the roots are equal. And therefore, what we look at is the branches. So Rav says split it along the lines of where the branches are. Whatever branches go to your side, you get. Whatever branches go to my side, I get. And that's where you'll split it. That's what Rav means. And Shmuel says, no, chokim. Shmuel says that we go after the roots. And since the roots are evenly distributed, then we split all the production of this tree. But, first of all, if the tree is totally planted in one of their properties, and the branches fall over the other person's property, it doesn't matter. Because it's all about where the roots of the tree are. It's about where the tree is planted. And therefore, if you have a position where all the roots are on one side, the tree belongs to that individual. The only question here, according to Tosfos, is when the roots are split evenly along the border, or it's like basically sitting on the border. Since it's sitting on the border, then according to Rav, you look at the branches. According to Shmuel, that's it. That's all we care about are the Shorashim or the roots, and we split it. According to Rashi, the determination here is always the roots. Right? Rashi says that we look at the roots and we split it along the lines of the roots, or we split along the lines of the planting line. So therefore, if it's more to one side or the other side, that's what we're talking about. Rav's talking about here, Lakan is we just look at where the tree's planted and we divide it along the lines of the planting line. That's it, according to the Shorashim. And then Shmuel comes along and says, no, chokim, we divide it evenly. Doesn't matter, roots, it sounds even from Rashi that the roots are irrelevant even. It just is, again, hard to understand because we're going to see in a second in the upcoming Gemara. But also Tosfos brings from other places that it's clear that the roots are the determining factor. Where the tree is actually planted happens to be the determining factor. Where it says, I have a question. Yilano made al mitzar, a tree that stands on the border itself. Yachloku, you divide it. That's exactly like Shmuel. Where it says, Tuyufta derav. It's a strong problem. It's a big problem for Rav. So Targa Shmuel libe derav. So Shmuel explained this for Rav. he was able to explain it for Rav, that the tree is found entirely on the border. So if it's entirely on the border, right, there's nothing to talk about, no telekan or lekan, because there is no kan or lekan, because the tree is encompassed or is totally encapsulated by the border. Yahachi, ma'ad memra. So then the Gemara says, okay, what's the chiddush then? If that's what the Braisa is speaking about, what do I need a Braisa to tell me that when it's sitting exactly on the border and it doesn't go to one side or the other side anymore, what do you have to tell me? That they have to split it. Of course they're going to split it. Lotzricha, the tali tune lechad gisa. That it's carrying its load to one side. So now Rashi is going to explain, when it says tali tuna to one side, it means its branches and its fruit are leaning to one side. On the other hand, Tosus over here says, no, what does it mean, tali tuni lechad gisa? It means that, the branches are equal, because that's what Tosus said before, that's Rav's position, the branches are equal, but the fruit is more to one side. There's more volume of fruit on one side than the other. So the Gemara says, okay, vakate maile memra. What's there to say over here? Again, if it's along the border, what's there to talk about? So maudutema damale plokachi. Right? So what can the individual say? When you divide the tree up, there are two possibilities of dividing the tree in half. I mean, it's on the border. It's tiling on the border. You can divide the tree vertically, right? And therefore, the distribution of the fruits would be uneven at that point because they're laid into one side. And therefore, if you divide it along this line, the one party will get more fruits. Or you could divide the tree along the horizontal line. If you divide it along the horizontal line, then they'll evenly distribute, or the fruits will be distributed more evenly. So that's where it says that you would think he could say, plog hachi, cut it along the vertical line of the border. The other party can say to him, listen, why are you dividing it this way? Like vertical-wise, you can do it horizontal-wise, and then we'd have the even amount. So there's no, again, when the tree entirely sits on the border, the even Rav would agree that it's yochloku. In that case, yochloku is because the chiddush is that we don't say that you divide it along the borderline necessarily, you just divide it in a way that distributes the fruits evenly. Okay, now we have the third statement from Amar Rav Yehuda, the Ravin, by Rav Nachman. Ravin Achi, lo tizbin arba d'smicha d'mato. Don't buy land that's close to the city. D'amar Rav Yubo, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, asur lo adam she'amod al sdei chaviro. Person can't stand and look out over his friend's field. B'shasho medet b'kamutah. When it's fully grown, and it's plentiful and looks like it's ready to be harvested, then you can't stand there. And what we're afraid over here is the ayin hara. We don't want someone standing over there either being jealous, right, or having negative thoughts about the individual, because the ayin hara is so powerful that we don't want people looking over it. Don't do that. It's asur for you to go up there and look at someone's field in these circumstances because we're the fear of the ayin hara. Mar says, ini. Vashkechinu Rabbi Abba, the Talmidei de Rav. So Rabbi Abba found that the students of Rav, Amalhu, Mayama Rav, Bahani Krai. Tell me how Rav explained these psukim. Baruch ata ba'ir, u baruch ata basadeh, baruch ata bivuecha, u baruch ata bitzeitecha. Right, so this is from coming up in Devarim, later on in Devarim. The brachot that come to those that follow the Torah. Vamulei, it said to him, Hachiyama Rav. This is how Rav explains these psukim. Baruch ata ba'ir, shehei beitcha samuch de beit ha-kneset. And you should have your house close to the shul. Baruch ata b'sadeh, shiyu nechasecha krovim le'ir. That your parnasa should be close to where you live, or close to the city. Baruch ata b'vuecha, shelo timza yishtecha sefek nida b'shad b'yadcha min ha-derech. You shouldn't find your wife in a circumstance of safek nida, when you come from traveling, when you come back from traveling, of course, koshekein if she's a vada nida. Baruch ata b'tzeitecha, she'etzeitzei me'echa kamotcha, that your offspring should be just like you. V'amar lehu, Rabbi Yochanan. All right, so I would just, we'll stop here for 1 second, but here, the statement of Rav is that you should have nechasecha krovim le'ir, right, that you should have your possessions or your parnosa close to the city. Right, so that we'll leave you that. Now, 1 step. Avamalhu Rabbi Yochanan, Lomar Hachi. That's not what Rav said. Eller, don't say this. Eller Baruch Ata Beir, She Beita Kisei Samuch L'Shulchanecha. You should have your bathroom close to your table. Now, Rashi says table, he doesn't literally mean your table here, but rather means your house. Of course, in their day, remember, they didn't have, indoor plumbing, and the outhouse, right, was the place that you went. That if you had somewhere close to your house, it was a lot more convenient than something far away. And Rashi says the reason that the Gemara used the word Shulchanech here is based on the Gemara on Shabbos, that a person should always check whether they have to go to the bathroom prior to eating or after eating. Aval Beit Knesset Lo. But by a shul, you should never try to live near a shul. Right, so Rabbi Yochanan and Tamei, Rabbi Yochanan is according to his reason, Damar schar psiot yesh, right? Because you get schar psia, you get schar for walking. So that's the minhag that is prevalent in Eretz Yisrael, because in Eretz Yisrael it's very hard to not live near a shul. So the minhag makom in Eretz Yisrael is that you always move, you don't go to the shul that's closest to you, you have to go to the next shul that's a little further away, in order that you get the schar psiot, according to Rabbi Yochanan. Alright, Baruch atah b'sadeh. So what does it mean, Baruch atah b'sadeh? That you should divide, you should never have all your eggs in one basket. You should diversify your crops. Shlish b'tuvah, shlish b'zeitim, v'shlish b'kfanim. One third grains, one third olives, one third grapes or vineyard. Because, as Rashi says, not all of those get hit in the same year. They're affected by different plagues, illnesses, and weather. And therefore, if you spread out your nechasim, at least you have a chance of that not everything will get destroyed in any single year. Baruch atah b'vo'echa, baruch atah b'tzeitecha. Shetei yitziyatcha min olam, kviyatcha l'olam. You should leave the world the way you came in. Ma biyatcha l'olam b'lochet, just like you came in without any sin. Af yitziyatcha min olam b'lochet. So too, you should leave the world without a chet. So Gemara says, the problem, obviously, now we had two explanations of the pasuk, but the problem, obviously, is because we have the statement of Rav that a person should not have their field near the city because we're afraid of this problem of, right, ayin hara. And then we have Rav's statement is, what does it mean that Baruch atah b'sadeh means that you should have your panasa, you should have your livelihood close to the city. And if that's the case, it means that your field should be close to the cities. How do you explain this? How do you reconcile between those two statements of Rav? So the Gemara says, Lokasho, it's not a problem. Hadamahadale shura viritka. Hadalumahadale shura viritka. Right? It's good fences make good neighbors. Right? So if you have a nice fence, meaning a geder vanim, you have otherwise Rashi says, a geder shal nitzarim. Right? You have it made out of rushes or bamboo. You have a nice fence that's put up there, then you don't have a problem. Then you can be close to the city. You have your panosa close by, and you also don't have the problem of ayin hara. The other hand is hadaloma hadalei shur v'ritka. In places where you don't have a wall, you don't have a fence up, then you have the problem of ayin hara. So in those cases, you should ensure that your field isn't so close to the city, so you don't run into this problem of the ayin hara. So of course, since we introduced the ayin hara, so we have to speak a little bit more about the ayin hara. Right, right, I would agree with you. That'd be nice to put up. Right, although I don't know how easy, like as opposed to today, fencing in, these are very, it could be large tracts of land. Fencing in large tracts of land is not so simple and it's very expensive, especially in their time. Today it's expensive, but in their time to build walls, significant walls or fencing around fields was not I don't think it was a cheap undertaking. All right, so Gemara says, while we're on this Indian of Ayin Hara, it says, the Pasuk says in Devarim, right, we just passed this recently, Amarav zu ayin. Rav says, what does it mean? Vesir mimcha kol choli? That means the ayin hara. So that's the why. Rav the tamei. Rav's according to one's reason. The Rav solik the beit kavrei. Rav went to the beit hakvarot. Right? Avad ma'ida avad. He did his thing. So, I don't know. The Gemara just leaves it as that. As he did his thing there. And Rashi explains there are a number of different interpretations based on the Rishonim. Rashi brings one interpretation is that he did the Yodel Ilchosh al Kvarot. You know, he did his sorcery, whatever he needed to do to get information out of those that were buried there to understand whatever kever why they died. The other possibility is the Aruch brings down that he actually had Shelat Chalom. He asked them in dreams. He planted, or there's people say he planted trees there. Others say that he just went there. He knew. This was something they made a statement. Ivad Madavad. Amar Tisha Matisha B'Ayin Hara. He checked out. He says 99% die by Ayin Hara. V'Echad B'Derech Eretz. 1% die from regular sickness. The other 99% die from Ayin Hara. It's pretty odds, pretty high odds here. And so Rav says that's what it means. V'Yisirin Shemcha M'Kol Choli. What's Kol Choli? Ayin Hara. Once you get rid of Ayin Hara, you get rid of 99% of the problems. So that's what Rav says. Tosas asks a very interesting question over here. He says that we learned this earlier in the Gemara here, but it's not unique to the Gemara in Baba Metzia, that Bnei Yosef were not subject to the Ayin Hara. Right? So Bnei Yosef, right? So if they're not subject to Ayin Hara, why don't they live much longer? Why don't they have a disproportionate longer lives over here? So what's the answer? The Tosa says the answer is an unbelievable answer. The Tosa says, Yesh lomar shemeitu b'derech eretz yoter me'acherim. that Yosef, Shevet Yosef has, they're disproportionately represented in the other 1%. And the 1% that die b'derech eretz, they are disproportionately represented here, and that's how it evens out. So that B'nai Yosef, even though they're protected from the Ayin Hara, they still die. Derech Eretz, right? But Tosfos has to reconcile that otherwise B'nai Yosef, based on Rav's statement, should have lived much longer. So Tosfos tries to... Right, but we don't find Yosef himself was one of the, right, died before the other Shvatim, and we don't find that there was an exceptional number of Bnei Yosef over time, that we see that the Aricha Yomei, that was something unique to Bnei Yosef. All right, Shmuel Amar, Shmuel, we're going to have a number of answers here. What is Kol Choli? Rav said it's the Ayin Hara. Shmuel says, Zeh Ruach, the Ruach, the wind, right? The wind is the bad thing. Shmuel the Tamei. Shmuel is according to his own reason. Damar Shmuel, kol beruach. Everything bad, everything that happens is from the wind. Ule Shmuel, ha'ika haruge malchut. What are you going to do with those people that are killed by the government? Meaning by, they get their heads chopped off with a sword. What type of ruach is the problem over there? How is this that people are dying from ruach? I mean, it's one thing if you die from illness, sickness, natural death, you can claim that it was the ruach that caused it. But on the other hand, when someone, you know, gets killed by the sword, it's very hard to claim that the ruach caused it. So Mar says, hanach nami, ilav zika, Abdul Husama v'chaye is an unbelievable statement by Shmuel. Had it not been from the Ruach, then we would be able to create some sort of medication for them, reattach their heads, and everything would go on just fine. That we could put them back together, basically we could put them back together. For not for the fact that the Ruach, he says, is sholet on the severed limb, or in the areas that were severed, then we could put them back together. Incredible statement of Shmuel. All right. Rabbi Chanina Amar, Zutzina. He says, Rav Chanina says, no, this is the cold. Kol choli is from the cold. Damar Rav Chanina, kol bidei shemayim, chutz, mitzinim, pachim. So Rav Chanina says that everything is bidei shemayim except for tzinim pachim. This we have in machlokas in other places. Rashi says tzinim pachim is kor hanofeach. So Rashi says that this isn't the ruach that Shmuel is talking about, because Shmuel talks about any type of wind. This is talking about like a cold, a bitterness, you know, or even a cold wind. So Rashi says that the pachim is modifying the tzinim. That the tzinim pachim is kor nofech, this blowing cold, or this blasts of cold. And then Tosfos learns what I think is more commonly quoted for tzinim and pachim. Tzinim is kor, and pachim is chom. So it's the, you know, the shivers and the fever. Basically, it'll be cold and the fever that we would say here, tzinim and pachim. Tosfos also mentions over here that obviously this is only talking about things that happen to people. Because the Gemara in other places already told us that the characteristics of people, their character traits, and their netiot are already kol bidei shemayim. That's already determined. As the Gemara says, is determined 40, you know, before the flat is born or even conceived. Already there's a malach determining the character traits of the individual. So when we say kol bidei shemayim here, we're talking about what happens, what transpires to an individual when they interact in the world, what transpires. So here, there's a second, this is another statement, Rabbi Chanina says that everything's bidei shemayim, except for tzinim and pachim, illness, shenemar, because it says in Mishlei, tzinim, pachim, there the translation really is like thorns and snares, b'derech ikesh, right, or on the road of those that wind or don't go the straight way. Someone who wants to take care of himself will get away from them. So again, the tzinim and pachim here, if you want to stay away from tzinim and pachim, you take care. That's how you make sure. If you want to ensure that things are okay, take care of that choli. Now this is the fourth option about what this kol choli is. Right, this is excrement. Damar mar. Now, excrement here, generally, tzoah would be excrement as I explained it, but here he says no. Damamar, tzoah tachotem, but tzoah ta'ozen, ruban kasheh, miyutan yafeh. Now, when it comes to mucus and earwax, too much is no good. A little bit is just right. So that's what he says. Kol choli comes from the mucus of the nose and too much mucus and too much earwax. That is the what Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says. And then we have a fifth interpretation about what kol choli is here. V'lazar mar zu mara. This is mara. Now mara, it's mara is probably the interpretation of mara is bile. Although from the Gemara over here, and we actually interpret it, seems he's talking about an organ. It's not, there's an organ. So truthfully, the liver is what produces the bile, although the bile is stored in the gallbladder. So I don't know if the Gemara here, when they talk about Mara, it's whether they're referring to the liver, more likely the gallbladder that stores the bile, and they're talking about the bile that's coming out. Tani nami hachi, machla, you know what the word machla, zumara, that is mara, they're synonymous. Machla, meaning sickness, and mara, and the bile, are synonymous. The lamani krashma machla, why is it called the machla? Why is this sounds like this organ, or the bile, why is it called machla? Shi mechale kol gufo shel adam, it causes the body of an entire person, the physical body, to be sick. Dvar acher, machla, sheshmonim u'shlosha chalayim tuluyim b'mara. 83 sicknesses are connected to the mara. And again, probably the gallbladder or the bile are connected to this. Now, 83 comes from the fact that the gematria of the word machla. Gematria of the word machla, if you look, mem is 40, lamed is 30, that's 70. Chet is 8, that's 78. Right? Plus 5 for hey is 83. So that's why the Gemara picked 83. Why, otherwise, why'd they get these 83 out of the... Right, they pull it out of a hat. So the 83 reflects the gematria of machla, that it causes 83 different sicknesses. Now, v'chulan, patshachrit v'melach, v'kaiton shalmai mevatlatan. Person who eats breakfast, basically. A person who has bread with salt and a water in the morning, that takes care of all of this. Now, Rashi is a very interesting Rashi. Rashi says, kaiton shalmayim, that's bread, salt, and water. And Rashi says, l'mishen lo yayin. That's for someone who doesn't have wine. The real, you know, for breakfast, you definitely should be having bread, salt, and wine. Now, if you don't have wine, okay, water will suffice. So, that's the breakfast of champions, right? There's the bread, salt, and wine. So, all of these sicknesses are protected by eating breakfast, basically. And now, the Gemara, of course, is going to discuss breakfast. So, Tan Rabbanan, Yud Gimel Dvarim, Nemru B'Pat Shacharit. People eat breakfast, right? There are 13 things that are said about Pat Shacharit. Number one, Matzelet min hachama, protects one from either the heat stroke, fever, uminatzina, from cold or colds, min hazikim, from the winds, this is like Shmuel, like the winds, umina mazikim, right, from those things that damage here. I don't know if these are sicknesses or mazikim in the right metaphysical sense. Umachimat peti, it makes the foolish smarter. Mezuchebedin helps a person to, I guess, present his position better so that he wins in court. Lomot Torah lolamed, he helps him to teach, to learn and teach Torah. V'dvarav nishma'im, when he says things, people will listen, meaning that they are mitkabel by people. V'talmudo mitkayim v'edo, he remembers that which he learns. V'im b'saro malehevel, he doesn't sweat or have a foul odor that emanates from him. And v'niskak lishto, and he will then spend time with his wife, and therefore would not be tempted by other women. The way Rashi explains that is that because if he eats breakfast, he'll feel happy, and therefore he'll want to spend time with his wife, and that will protect him when he goes out to the workplace, that he won't be looking at other women. He won't be tempted by other women. And the last thing that it does is it takes care, it kills all the parasites in one's stomach. And those that say, af motzia takina. Rashi has a girsa, it seems that tekinav et hatagar, takes away jealousy, and according to Rashi, strife, umachnis et ahava, and brings people to love. And again, because when a person is satisfied and, content, when he's content, then he doesn't get angry so easily, and he's easier to reconcile with others and to deal with others. He doesn't feel anxiety or uneasy, and therefore he's easier to deal with. So now, continuing with these this breakfast issues, Amalei Rabo the Rovo, Bar Mori, Menaha Milto Damre Inchi. Where do we know that these common sayings of people, that Shitin Rehiti Rahut, Velo Mata the Gavra de Mitzafra Korach, that I ran, 60 people ran, or 60 runners ran, and they couldn't catch the guy who ate breakfast? I mean, you can never catch the guy who ate breakfast. We've seen this a number of times. Now, Tosfos always asks over here, I think this is interesting. It says, why shitin? Why 60? What is the nikkav of 60? So, Tosfos gives two possible interpretations over here about what the 60 is over here. One possibility is that that's talking about the seasons, meaning that breakfast protects you from the chom and from the ktsina. So we just saw yesterday, right, and yesterday's daf, the seasons each last for 60 days. So the tchom, right, the hot period and the cold period are 60 days each. So that's what the 60 refers to. Inami, which is to me the more interesting one of Tosfos, is the second answer of Tosfos, that the 60 is because he says that whenever the Gemara wants to talk about something, kach derech leminkar b'chol makom, shitin. 60 is a number that's used throughout the Gemara. I mean, that's what Tosfos suggests over here, which seems to be true, that 60 is a large number. I mean, it's a number both for bittul. We talk about bittul berov, right? The Gemara uses 60 as being something that's not notain tam anymore, right? 60, whenever the Gemara wants to either exaggerate or say a large number or have some sort of, you know, be mitbatel and something, they use the term 60, and that's what Tosfos says. Here they use 60 again. 60 was just a term of exaggeration or plenty or many. And that's why it's used over here, like it is used in many other places in Shas. All right, so now, he says, V'amru Rabbanan, hashkem v'achol b'kaitz b'pnei hachama, get up early in the summer because of the heat, and in b'choreif b'pnei hatzinan, in the winter because of the cold, and that's why Tosfos said the 60 days. Because it says in the pasuk in Yishayo, lo ir avu v'lo yitzma'u. They won't be hungry, they won't be thirsty, v'lo yakem sharav, and they won't be affected by the heat, velo vashem vashamesh, and the sun. So the Gemara says, let me interpret that pasuk for you. The pasuk means that what? That read it this way: those that are lo yakem shrav vashamesh, those will not be affected by heat and the sun. Kaven delo yiravu velo yitzmo, because they're not hungry and they're not thirsty. I mean, if you eat breakfast and you're not hungry and thirsty, then you won't have the problems of shrav and shemesh. He says, Amalei atamart li mehatam. You brought my source from there. Ba'ana milachom ha'ocha. I'll tell you where my source is from. This is where I think it's from. It says, Vavadtem et Hashem lokechem, uvarach et lach machovet memecha. It says that you will worship Hashem, and Hashem will give bracha to your bread, meaning that your mazon, memecha, and your drink. Vavadtem et Hashem lokechem. What is that? Zu kriyat shema v'tfilah. That is kriyat shema v'tfilah. Uberach et lach mecha. Right, and you will therefore be blessed by your lachmecha v'memecha, zupat v'melech v'kiton shalmayim. Right, that is the bread and water of shacharit that will protect you. Mikan ve'elech. From there on in, meaning the continuation of the psukim, v'yisilti machala mikarbecha, I'll remove all machala from you. So I mean, again, if you do what Hashem asks, you do kriyat shema tefillah, you do what is proper, then Hashem will bless you with breakfast, and if you have breakfast, then you don't have to worry, then I'll be meisir kol machala mikarbecha, then I'll remove any sickness from you. So breakfast is the item that protects you. And of course, this is v'avtatem d'Hashem lekecha, zu kriyat shema tefillah, right, it's one of the sources that the Rambam cites as being a reason, or that when we talk about avodah at Hashem, avodah at Hashem means avodah is derech tefillah, through tefillah. Now here you see the Gemara in a number of places uses the term avodah to refer to tefillah, and that's why the Rambam, Maimonides believes, right, he counts in the Sefer Mitzvot, one of the mitzvot to be tefillah. Being over Hashem through tefillah is a mitzvah min ha-Torah, as opposed to many other Rishonim, including the Ramban, who takes him to task over there, where tefillah is simply a mitzvah dirabanan. Okay, Amalei, Rav Yehuda, the Rav Ada, Mishocha. So this is interesting. Rav Yehuda spoke to Rav Ada, who had a profession. You know what his profession was? Mishocha. He was a surveyor. That was his profession. He did surveying. So now he's going to give him some advice as a surveyor. He says, number one, Lo tizazel b'mishchata. Don't be careless in your measurements. T'chol purta or purta chazal de kurkuma rishka. Because any little patch of land has value. Why? Because you can plant saffron there. Saffron of the Rishka you can plant there, which was a very expensive crop, and even small amounts of it have value. So therefore, don't just say, round it off, rounding error, don't worry about it, but you got to be exacting in your measurements, because every little piece of land has value in the sense that it can grow saffron. And again, even today, still, saffron is considered, is still a very expensive spice. So again, here's the next statement. Right, of Rav Yehuda giving advice to Rav Ada, the surveyor. He says, "Dalada moti anigra zilzel b'hu, den hara lo timshachu klal." So again, here there's a machloket Rashi and Tosfot over here about what this means. The two of them agree that anigra and anhara. Anhara is the main river, and anigra are the channels that come off the river to take the water to the fields. That they agree about. Then the second part they also agree about, which is danhara lo timshachu klal. When it comes to the river banks, don't measure them at all. I mean that since they have to give room there, and we're going to see in a second, the Gemara is going to talk about this, that you have to give room on the banks of the river to allow the I call them porters, but the people who pulled the boats along the river with the ropes, they needed a place to walk on the banks of the river. So you had to provide them. There was an automatic easement or an automatic eminent domain that they claimed that space along the river was considered public space. And therefore, that since it was public space, he says, don't even measure it. What do you mean? You should do it by umnaradas, means that you should estimate the amount, but estimate in a generous manner. I mean, estimating not in the sense that you estimate you'll come under four amot, but you'll be estimating, therefore you'll give an excess of what should be, because you need to be generous over there. Now, there here is a machlokas, Tosfos and Rashi, about why you have to be generous in that area. Tosfos says you have to be generous in this area because otherwise the people who are walking along the banks will be there'll be interference for them along the banks by they're going to bump into things or there'll be branches hanging over. So you want to clear enough space so they don't have that interference. Rashi says that the reason that you should be generous in that area is because there is no mechila. Since it's a public place and all of the public uses it, if you give too little, you can't get mechila. Because you're affecting the Rabim. And when you affect the Rabim, there's no way to get Mechila from the Rabim. So that's the way Rashi learns the problem. Now, going back to the first part of the statement, which is Dala Muna Da Nigra, that you have to give four amot on the side of the channels that come off the river. Rashi says, Zilzubahu. He says, you should be Mitzamtzeim. Make them tight, close to the, make them very close. Meaning that don't be, on the other hand, don't be generous in this area. Right? Don't make it extra spacing. Make it exact and close into the river, because there, Rashi says, like the opposite of what he says, there they have B'nai Mechila. Why? Because there, even if you make a mistake, the people who are affected are not all the Rabim, they're just the people around that neighborhood who use that area. So since it's a limited number of people, if there's a mistake making, you can ask Mechila, you could get Mechila for that issue. On the other hand, Tosfos learns the other way around totally, the exact opposite. He says, the Dalada Moat next to the river, you should do them generously. Generously means you should give them arba amot mishukha kot, wide, four amot extra wide, so people can walk around the banks of these channels without falling in. So Tosfos says, be generous in that area. So again, the Rashi and Tosfos disagree totally about the first case, which is Dalam de Nigra. Rashi says, do it as small as possible because you get Mechila. So don't worry if you make a mistake, you get Mechila. And Tosfos says, no, make it extra. Be generous in that area, even though you're measuring it, but measure it in a generous way because we don't want to interfere or hurt the people who have to walk along the banks of those channels. When it comes to the river, Tosfos and Rashi both agree that don't measure at all. Don't measure at all means do it an eye estimate. But when you do an eye estimate, you're going to be more generous, give extra space. The reason for that is different. Rashi says the reason for it is because you can't get Mechila. If you make a mistake, there is no Mechila because you're affecting the Rabim. Tosfos, on the other hand, says the reason for it is because you need the porters who are pulling along the side of the river. They need their space over there. Again, we're going to see this in a second in the Gemara that was a necessity over here. All right, so now, the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei, Rabbi Yehuda is according to his own reasoning when he's explaining this to Rav Ada Meshucha, Rav Ada the surveyor. Dam Rabbi Yehuda Amar Amot da Nigra livnei Anigra dan Hara de Kuliyama. When it comes to the four Amot that go along the banks of the channel, those belong to all the people who use the channel. They're common property to everybody on the channel. So according to Tosfos, again, that means be generous. Don't measure them so tight. Let the people have room to walk because it belongs to everybody who belongs to the channel. Where to Rashi it is that we know there's a limited number of people. In case you make a mistake, you can get Mechila. Then Hara, when it comes to the banks of the river, that is public property. It's public property. And even if you own alongside the river, you have to give up. There's a certain amount that you have to give up on the side of the river that will belong to the public, even though your property is adjacent to there. So Machriz Vami, Rabbi used to announce, Malei Katvei Nagdei Betrei Avri Denera Kotsu. Go out and chop down the trees or any interference on both sides of the river, the amount of the shoulder length of those that take the boats. Again, those that carry the ropes of the boats, they pull the boats up. Give them enough space, so they're generous amount of space, so they can walk on an angle. Because they're pulling the boats, so they have to angle themselves away from the river in order to lean forward and not fall into the river. So you have to give them enough room where they're on the angle and can lean forward and they'll feel comfortable and not get caught on things. So Rav Natan Barushia was a little zealous on this halacha. And Katz Shitzar Amta, he went ahead and he cleared on the sides of the river. He clipped 60 namot along the sides of the river. Atulei B'nei Mashroniya. The people of Bnei Shroniya who owned this forest that was adjacent to the river, they got up mad at him, they grabbed him, and dafnu, and they gave him malchus. Husavar, what did he do wrong? Husavar kirshut rabim. He thought these banks of the river, if they belong to the rabim, they should be just like a Rishut the Rabbim is 16 amot wide. Velohi, that's not true. Hatam be'inan kulehai. Over there by Rishut the Rabbim, you need 16 amot. There's a lot of traffic. There's a lot of people over there. So you need a full width of 16 amot. Hacha, the reason over here has nothing to do with the Rabbim traveling along the sides of the river, but rather Mishum Amtuche Ashlehenhu, that it means for pulling the ropes of the boats. So there you only need Kamalei Katve Nagde Sagi. As long as it's got the amount of the, you know, the width, the broad, the shoulders, or the leaning of the shoulders of those that pulled the ropes, that'll be sufficient. So again, the reason when we say it belongs to the public, it doesn't belong to the public in the sense it's a public domain that people travel on, but rather it belongs to the public because anybody's bringing a boat upriver and needs people to pull the ropes, they're going to go alongside there, and that's considered the public domain for that reason. So therefore, that equation of equating the 16 amot Rishut HaRabim to this Rishut of the Rabim alongside the river was an incorrect assumption, and when he cut down 16 amot of their forest, that was a mistake. He did what he did wrong in that instant. Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Havalehu Abba Aguda Denaro. So Rabba Bar Rav Huna had a forest that was on the bank of the river. Amrulei, so the government, I mean the Jewish government, seems here, came to him, or the Jewish government of the city came to him and says, Nikotzmar, cut down your trees. He says, Amrulei, listen to me. Kutsu Eli v'tatai, if the property's upriver for me and downriver for me, cut theirs, v'hadu Nikotz Ana, then I'll cut mine down. So he says, I'm not cutting my stuff down. Why? Because if anybody upriver or downriver doesn't cut, the cutting of my area doesn't do any good, right? Because then you don't have no continuum along that side of the river. So Mark says, Hei Chavit Hochi, how could you ever answer like this? First of all, right, just from a side of a prisoner's dilemma or a circular logic, right, then everybody can say the other person cut first, right? Nobody's ever going to cut it down. That's one. But that's not what the Gemara is after. The Gemara is after here from a Musari standpoint, which is Vaktiv. It says, right, in Tzvanya, eat koshushu v'koshu, right? Grand yourselves together, tie yourselves, make yourselves strong. Now, the Gemara interprets this, v'amareish lakash kshot atzmecha v'achar kach kshot acherim. You know, straighten yourself out first before you demand of others to straighten themselves out. Right? That's the basic position in Musar. Before you give Musar, before you tell others what to do, make sure that what you're doing is correct and take care of, you know, fix your own shop before you go and fix other people's issues. So over here, how can he demand that others go cut their forest down before he cuts his forest down? Right? That's an improper behavior. So Hatam, no, Gemara says you have to know the case here. You have to know the facts. What are the facts? Hatam Abba de Beit Parzak Rufila Havo. We had this again. We had this before in the Gemara. This Abba de Beit Parzak Rufila was some sort of a Persian government official, lived upriver and downriver from him. So since they were Persian government officials, he knew that they would not listen to the Chachamim, or they wouldn't listen to the Jewish government, or whoever was asking them to cut it down, they would tell him to take a hike. So the problem is, if he knows that they're not going to listen, then cutting down his forest will be for naught. It makes no sense for him to be the first one to cut if the likelihood of the others cutting is almost nil. So he says, first of all, make sure that you really can cut the people upriver and downriver for me. If you cut them, I have no problem. You can take my stuff down. But until you do that, don't cut mine, because then it'll just be a waste for me for you to cut my stuff down. Vamar. If they cut, kaitzina, I'll cut. Velo kaitzu, right? If they don't cut, amayikutz, right? What's the purpose of me cutting? Dimim tachiluhu ashlahu. If the workers or people are pulling the boats or coming with their ropes, mistagiluhu. Velo lo mistagiluhu. If they have the possibility to walk and have a clear path through, then they'll take that full clear path through. If it's not clear, they're not going to jump from sides of the river from bank to bank. They're going to pink the bank of the river. That's clear. So clearly, if the Persian officials over here aren't going to cut their trees down, guess that side of the river is not going to be used because it's just not a clear side of the river. So everybody's going to be walking on the other side of the river. So there's no point in cutting my stuff down. All right, so we'll stop over here.